Let's move on to recruitment and retention of professional teachers. And I know one of the specific, I'll say, goals for the school district has been to increase the hiring of Native teachers, teachers of Native background. Cass, in your opinion, how's that effort going? Have you seen it proceed with the momentum that you'd like?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what's going on with a Native hire, and because it's been one of our goals for since I've been on the board. And I think we've had more dialogue this past year than we've had in the past working with STA. And we have an upcoming work session on Native hire. And it's not just teachers, it's staff. Any job that's in the school district, to get more Native people in there, and if not Native, minority, I feel as well, it just is a more comfortable presence for those students that are of a minority, I think.
Yeah, Tom, anything to add?
Yeah, I think that we have felt very strongly, and the research has indicated very strongly, that having role models within the district, especially in teaching positions, is very, very helpful in terms of motivating students to, one, recognize that they can succeed, and two, induce them pursue goals within the educational system that let them progress on, get a degree after post-secondary education, or go into some sort of training situation. And we think that it has a lot to do with preventing dropouts, and so we're very interested in doing it. What are we accomplishing? It's pretty early. We've had a little bit of success. We're going to have a work session in the November meeting to address the problem, and we're also having a presentation in the October meeting, which is next week, from PETUS, which is an organization that promotes Native teachers and administrators, and they're going to present some information for the board. It's one of our goals this year to try to improve Native hire. Unfortunately, we're at a point where we're not expanding the teaching ranks. In other words, when we had 1,700 students, we were doing a fair amount of hiring, and we're obviously not doing as much hiring or almost no hiring at this point. And so it limits our ability to improve the number of Native teachers within the ranks of the school system.
Just based on whether there's a prevalence of openings.
Yeah, that's basically what we're dealing with. Yeah.
2 years ago, the legislature changed the pension plan for public employees and teachers. And it's something called Tier 2. And wonder if Tier 2, if that retirement program has hurt professional recruitment in the district, Tom.
It's actually Tier 4 now.
Tier 4 now.
Yeah.
Okay, give us a quick, if you can give us a crash course here. we have different levels at which teachers can contribute to their retirements.
It used to be what was called a defined benefit program. In other words, if you stayed in the system long enough and retired, you had a defined benefit. It was a certain percentage of what you finished up. In other words, if you finished 20 years at a certain level of salary, you got a certain level of pension. And slowly that's declined from tier one down to tier two, down to tier three. And it's now, as of a couple of years ago, not a defined benefit program, but a defined contribution program. And what's happening is that you're offered as a retirement incentive a 401k package where you have to contribute to it. And the district contributes a certain amount to it, and that determines what you're going to get as a pension. And one of the things that used to attract people to Alaska to teach was that it had a good good retirement system, and it's a very, very flimsy retirement system at this point, and it's very difficult to get anybody to, you know, recruiting, especially since what can happen is that you can contribute to the retirement system for a period of 5 years, vest, and then take your retirement and leave the state. And that's what we're anticipating happening, is that a lot of the people who were hired in the last 5 years will simply move south and take their retirement with them.
And you've, I mean, have you seen concrete examples of that in the hiring process right now?
We have concrete examples in people not being interested in taking jobs because it's too expensive to live here, and they have a lousy retirement system, and so they're not taking the jobs. What we're really worried about is a couple years down the road when people who have been hired are finishing their first 5 years and can simply leave the system and take their money with them. Hmm. And that's going to be interesting to watch. Hmm. There's a lot of predictions along those lines.
Anything to add, Cass? All right.
Yeah. On one of the earlier questions on the timber receipts,
yes,
and funding, and how are we handling that if that goes away, on a local level, on a school board man, when teachers retire, if we don't have to replace their position, we're not replacing it. For instance, if it's a vocational, or if it's a position that we don't have to rehire for it, you know, administration, you do. But we don't like to do that. But we're saving money by not replacing positions that don't need to be replaced at this point.
Hmm. All right. 747-5877. If you have a question, it is about 24 minutes before the hour. We're talking with Cass Pook and Tom Conley of the Sitka School Board, and the municipal elections are coming up on October 6th. This is the second in a series of three live call-in forums. We hope you'll join us. Share your thoughts again. 747-5877 or email us news@kcaw.org. Let's go on to AYP, Adequate Yearly Progress, which is the government system of measuring student achievement. Within the Sitka schools, I believe only Sitka High and the Reach Homeschool Program achieved AYP last year under the No Child Left Behind Act. Cass, are you concerned by these results, and how should the board respond?
I'm concerned, but we knew we would get to this point because as the percentage goes up as far as being at 70%, 75%, 85% proficient, we're eventually going to get to a point where no schools are going to meet AYP.
We're talking about the federal government's goal here of 100% proficiency in all subjects by 2014, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, what do you think of the results this year and whether the board should have a response or not to that?
We certainly should have a response, and we should certainly achieve or strive to achieve proficiency with all students. Can we manage to get everyone to a proficient level? No, of course not. And what we do notice about the AYP results this year and failing to meet AYP in the various schools, it's almost exclusively on the basis of troubles meeting AYP for special education students. And there also was a problem with Pacific High in terms of adequate graduation levels. Not everybody graduated in a period of 4 years. The requirement is that when you start as a freshman, you have to graduate 4 years later. And we're running a school system, especially in the alternate school, where we're encouraging people to take 5 or 6 years if that's what they need to get through the system. And you get penalized for that. You know, if you don't graduate in 4 years, you automatically have failed. And that's a foolish system. I think the other thing is that we've done fine and are above state standards in all areas except special education. And if you figure that the special education student is in special education because they have special needs, you're obviously not going to get 100% proficiency if you judge them on the basis of the routine and standard test. You know, it's just, you know, it's a no-brainer.
Cass, you're smiling here. Do you have anything to add to this AYP thought?
I just agree with what he's saying.
Well, it just seems like it's something that generates such strong feelings on either side of the issue. You know, whether it's an adequate way to measure the progress that mm-hmm. school districts are making, or whether it's a hindering, you know, progress in some cases by maybe putting some pressure on students who work better in a lower pressure environment.
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing is that we're running, we're using a standard that is a single standard and doesn't apply to everyone. And it also encourages the school system to teach to the test, which is a very foolish thing to do. I mean, that really doesn't indicate whether you are educated or not. You know, if indeed the whole program is designed to make sure that you can answer the questions that are put out on the test, that doesn't require a lot of thinking on anybody's part.
So. Sitka School District's goal, among the other goals, or among its goals listed on the website, is a 100% graduation rate. Does AYP testing interfere with that goal or help in reaching that goal? Cass?
I think it helps in them reaching that goal because they're challenged to work harder. I know with the rubric system that we have, 1, 2, 3, or 4, I know there's parents that didn't like it when we first did that, but I like it that you can see where your child is weak, their strengths and weaknesses. So I think it's just a good measuring to meet their goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tom?
Yeah, we very strongly push students and encourage students to graduate, and it's a mark of achievement for most people, and so it's something very desirable. And we've been fairly successful. We've gotten essentially all our students through the high school qualifying exam. We've done very well in that regard. I think last year we didn't have anybody who didn't graduate because they didn't get through the high school qualifying exam, which is, you know, speaks volumes for success.
Hmm. Within the buildings, the district faculty has started an anti-bullying program known as, I want to say it's Olweus, is that right?
Olweus.
Is the board on board? Is the board, you know, in agreement that this is an important project for the schools? Cass?
Yes, we were in agreement with it, and I think it's, we just got a report at the last meeting from Pam, and I think that everybody is on the right page. There's something to fall back on as far as holding students accountable to a program. Before there wasn't anything, so it was hard to be consistent. So,
Tom?
Yeah, I think kudos go to the teachers and to the Sitka Education Association, which is the teachers' union. They were the ones that initiated this program. They were the ones that did the initial funding, and they're the ones who are running the program and pushing it. And they recognized that there was a problem with bullying. There's bullying that is physical. There's bullying that is mental. There's bullying that's going on the cyber scale. And they recognize that it's interfering with people's ability to function well within the system, and they decided they wanted to do something about it. And we're very, very strongly in support of it and are very pleased with what they've brought to us.
You know, there are a lot of efforts to, and bullying is a very serious topic. You know, whether it's a serious problem in any given school district varies, but it's certainly, you know, a serious topic, and a lot of attention is given to awareness of it and making sure that the students and faculty both know how to recognize it and deal with it. But what about enforcement? What about giving anti-bullying programs some teeth? You know, is there any way that the board can do that? And how hard a line should the district take against bullying? Cass?
I was just thinking about that enforcement, that's going to be the hard part. Because I think when you live in a community where you know everybody, it's, I as a mom can tend to be empathetic, and I need to think tough that if we don't nip it in the bud, it's going to just keep going and possibly get worse. And I think it brought a lot of awareness, not just to the students, but parents of really what goes on with bullying in Sitka. And there was a lot of good information from students when they took the survey that they didn't even know they were being bullied, or they didn't know what bullying was, especially in the lower levels. So awareness, but I think staff is, and we'll have to back them up as a board of enforcing the program consequences.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Yeah, I think the key to success in a situation like this is to inculcate in the students social disapprobation. In other words, it's not an acceptable thing to do to bully people, and we have to depend essentially mostly on the students to enforce it. And we need to give them the tools to do it, and that's what we're trying to do. Do we eventually have to apply disciplinary measures when somebody does something outrageous? Yes, absolutely we do. And I think that we've been fairly good at doing that. We, you know, they're when social disapprobation is not sufficient to control it in an individual case, then there are consequences.
When we talk about social disapprobation, we're talking about a circumstance where a student's peers would look down on that action.
Absolutely.
And there would be no, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, no cool factor right. in that kind of behavior. Mm. But Cass?
Yeah, when I was in high school, there was, you know, freshmen coming into high school, there was a initiation, and it was allowed. And I think students need to realize the weight of jokes can be bullying. It's not funny. It's not funny to the person that's having something happen to them. And I guess now the message I'd especially like to get out to students, if you think you could do something, walk away from it and laugh and think it's a joke, it could get you in trouble with the law. And, you know, there's bright kids, kids that have a future, that college, this can affect their entrance to college. And think about that. You know, get that message into their mind. Jokes can be bullying.
You know, bullying sometimes affects students who may be marginalized in some other way, whether it's due to their socioeconomic background or their ethnicity or any number of factors. Their parents, even, may not always be in the best position to advocate for their interests. What does the school district, or what should the school district do to assure all parents that their children will not be victimized in school? How do you reach out to parents in addition to making students and faculty aware of what's going on? Tom?
Well, what we're trying to do with the bullying program is to involve not only the students but also the parents. And there are meetings that are designed to bring the parents in. Obviously, they have to be willing to come to the school and participate in those meetings, but it's being offered. I think that, you know, when a child is a victim of bullying and needs counseling, we're in the position of doing that, either through the school counselor or referring them out to other facilities. And we always involve the parents when we do something along those lines. But, you know, can we be 100% successful? Probably not. And again, I would stress, it really has to be internalized in the students for this sort of thing to work. You know, we realize that we shouldn't bully as adults, but it's something that you need to learn, and you need to learn by experience.
Yeah, Cass, how do you think we bring the parents into this equation here?
Parents need to be heard. They need to know that something's going to be done when their child's being bullied. And I think we're on a better track with this new program that we adopted. But parents are going to be watching it. They're going to be watching, and they're going to watch the outcome of it. If I go in and say their child comes home and says they were picked on at school, they go report it to the staff, are they going to be heard, and is action going to be taken? If not, then this program probably won't work. So... Yeah. That's just my own opinion.
747-5877. The phone number here, 747-5877, to ask a question or share a comment with the two school board candidates in October 6th's election, Cass Pook and Tom Conley. We're sitting here in a live election forum, the second of three here on Raven Radio. Our last one is tomorrow night. We've been talking about funding issues and curriculum issues and teacher retention issues. Right now we're talking about bullying, because the school district is embarking on a new program, a new anti-bullying program. In upper-level schools, school-related bullying and hazing can often take place off school grounds. What should the district do to assure parents and children, that they're not going to be victimized by other students when bullying moves outside of the schools? And we talked about, I know we've said this a few times tonight, that there's only so much enforcement that can happen by the school district off campus. But can the district, should the district be doing anything to assure people that bullying is not acceptable after school hours as well? Cass?
I think there's a confusion on it from parents because if it started at school, it continues over the weekend. It's part of school. Mm. And that's something they need to talk to the principals about. If their child was being harassed at school during the week or on Friday afternoon, and then Saturday night, that kid is picked on due to the same issue, then it's still a school issue. Same thing with cyberbullying. Starts at school, carries on to the evening, it's still school. That's my understanding of it. But challenge it.
Yeah. Tom?
It's something that has to be decided on an individual case-by-case basis, and very frequently in those sorts of situations, sad to say, we need some legal advice to decide where the rules are and what the boundaries are. There's no question that if bullying occurs in school-sponsored activities, in school-sponsored trips, etc., that we do indeed have authority and can enforce the rules. It becomes a little bit more questionable when it occurs completely off the school grounds. Say it occurs during the summer rather than during the classroom time during the winter, etc. What is our status, and what are we allowed to do in a legal sense? And it gets very complicated. And it really becomes a case-by-case sort of thing.
All right.
And I agree with what Cass is saying in terms of the fact that we do need to realize that what starts in school may continue on beyond the school day.
Yeah. Well, such a heavy topic. We're nearing the end of the hour, so there's a nicer question next here. Wonder if, you both have, Tom, you have children who are past school age now. Mm-hmm. Cass, you mentioned that you have children in the schools. Has serving on the school board changed the way you view your own child's education? Cass?
Once you think you have all the answers before you're on the school board, then you get on the other side and you go, wow, there's a lot to learn. And it gives you more understanding to the choices that decisions that the school board makes. I'm very involved with my kids' education. I think I was before. So it hasn't really changed my involvement with my children in school.
Tom, did any changes in your service on the school board?
I've been on the school board here for 10 years, and I was on the school board in Ketchikan for about 5 years. We have an older child who's now in his 30s who's doing a second postdoctoral stint in astrophysics and graduated from the Ketchikan school system and did very well, and we were very pleased with, what was provided to him. We have a daughter who is now 24, and she graduated from the Sitka school system and had some special education and developmental delay needs, and was very well provided for and was very well accepted within the system and supported. And so we've been very pleased. Have we learned over the years? I hope so, And it's, still plugging away.
All right.
We all had a tear in our eye when Anya graduated.
She ran across the auditorium barefoot to grab her diploma.
Wonderful, wonderful. Before we wrap up here, just one question. I want to ask both of you to kind of broadly assess the functionality of the school district, just an overall kind of diagnosis, I guess, of how things are going. On a scale from total chaos to Swiss watch efficiency, where do you see Sitka schools. Tom, we'll start with you.
I don't see the school system as being efficient, and I think that it's very common in small communities for things to be a little chaotic, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. This is a very caring system. We have a group, very large group of very caring teachers who are very invested in the development and the education of students, and who spend incredible amounts of time doing it. They're there day and night. They come in early. They stay late. And I think, you know, from the standpoint of is this a caring and effective system, I would say yes, it is. Is it in terms of, you know, efficient? No. But that's the way it goes.
All right, Cass, the functionality of the Sitka schools on a scale of total chaos to Swiss watch efficiency, where do you see it?
I'd agree with Tom as far as efficiency and No Child Left Behind. We can't get all the help we need with the mandates for No Child Left Behind, and it's hard to get people to move here for the jobs with the change in the tiers. You know, tiers and purrs, and the cost of living to come here. But as far as the staff, the teachers, I don't think they get paid enough for what they do. And I can't raise their salary much, but, you know, they go early in the morning before school starts. They're there after school. Some of it, they're volunteering extra time. So the grading, the paperwork that they have to do on special ed students as far as federal mandates, they earn every penny.
Yeah.
I think the other thing we should say is we're very interested and very dedicated to the idea that we have to give them a comprehensive education that is not only the 3 R's and the core subjects, but all the other stuff, music and art and literature and critical thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And are we doing a good job? I think so. I think that we're doing a very good job.
All right, Cass, you have one more.
I'd just like to take a minute to thank all of the parents, especially in that come to Baranoff and Keat, Blatchley by High School. Kids don't want parents to come to school. But the community and all of the volunteer work in the schools does make a difference. So thank you to all those parents and members of our community that come and help out in the school.
All right. Well, Cass Pook, thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And Tom, thank you. Tom Conley.
Thank you very much.
All right. That concludes the second in our series of live election call-ins. Cass Pook and Tom Conley are the school board candidates on the ballot this year. The election is October 6th. Raven Radio election forums will continue tomorrow night, when we will discuss the two ballot propositions on road bonds and the 0.5% sales tax hike with Public Works Director Michael Harmon, Operations Manager Scott Berlinski, and City Finance Director Dave Wolf. You have been listening to a live presentation of Raven News here on KCAW in Sitka. We're going to bring up a little music and then some news from the BBC, and then back to regular programming shortly after 8 o'clock. Thanks for being with us, and many thanks to everybody here at KCAW who made tonight possible. Thanks very much.